Monday, May 6th. It is LA Podcast. I have to speed up because Hayes doesn't like it when I go slow. It's Scott Frazier, Hayes Davenport, and Alyssa Walker.
I don't like this role that you are creating for me. It's like a disciplinarian. I'm just excited. The tires are so much to talk about.
My cadence is naturally so much slower than yours. We do have a very, very packed week. There was a ton of news from the past week, and we want to get into it. Of course, we want to start with our LA stories, though. Hayes, do you have one you want to start with?
I do, and you were there. Scott and I went to one of the last few nights of the Good Luck
bar. Yeah, we can share this.
That's on the most talked about intersection on LA Podcast. The one of Virgil and Hillhurst. Sunset and Hillhurst.
If
and
you want to complain,
Hollywood,
please use the hashtag Hyperion Hyperlocal. Hashtag Hyperion Hyperlocal. That is our recurring segment.
We went to the bar. It was like really packed. They are getting kicked out by the people that just bought the building, I think. And what are they going to do with it? It's going to be a hotel.
Boutique hotel.
Boutique hotel. And the story is, I was waiting outside for a while and listening to the doorman. And he was saying that the new owners might not even go through with the buy. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Why?
Yeah.
He said the carpets have never been cleaned in there. The place is 30 something years old.
Do you know what's funny? There's a vacuum store
right next door. We were saying they should have teamed up, but the vacuum store got kicked out too.
It did, yeah.
And he said when they clean up, he said that right now it's safe because the carpets are keeping whatever is underneath there contained
alive.
Yes, but well, like once
entombed,
once it's like unearthed, it will be released into the neighborhood.
King Tut's curse.
Yeah. And he's like, and then it's going to be really expensive to take care of. Now it's okay because the carpets are holding it in, but as soon as those come up, we're going to be in big trouble. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
My LA story follows immediately afterward. There's like an Iliad Odyssey thing going on here. But we were inside. Hayes did a great job getting my partner Sarah and I into Good Luck Bar because we showed up later than him. And
I held a spot in one.
Yeah.
Are you supposed to do that?
I asked the doorman.
Okay.
I said to the bouncer, I was like, is this okay? Is this rude? I said.
And yes. He was totally fine with it. Yeah. What does he care? It's only going to be there for... it's already gone.
I'm just here until they pull the carpets out.
It's May 6th. It's already gone. And the moment of the night for me was when Sarah was talking about the Netflix original show, Grace and Frankie.
Oh, yeah.
And Hayes said that we were the target audience for Netflix original programming.
Yeah, I just hear you guys talk about it a lot. And then I saw you post about it. I could tell it really stuck with you.
And it's kind of an odyssey of the soul, yeah. Really.
What does that mean?
Well, it doesn't sound just good. Like, yeah. I think about it, and it's obviously true. I watch a lot of their stuff, but none of it's particularly good. I feel like I have a lot of fellow Netflix watchers out there, millennials with very little else to do and a fear.
A lot of them were
outside
at the same bar that night where we were.
Yes.
Alyssa wasn't there. She was hanging out with her new friends at the KCRW Greater LA podcast.
Wow. Yeah. We had just been talking about this podcast and how it was coming on the scene on Inside the Issues with Alex Cohen.
Uh-huh.
And then it turns out Alyssa's on it. Is that your
room for everyone?
It's true. There is.
It's a big wide
Wait,
open
we,
media.
We talked
landscape.
About it when we were at Spectrum.
I think so.
Oh, really?
Not on the show.
Not on the show. Yeah, you were. I mean, I wasn't. Yeah,
Alyssa. Yeah,
I was in makeup for hours that day.
you've been busy this week.
Yeah, I did get to go. I made my trip to Santa Monica. It's true. That was really fun. Their beautiful new building, which is very has light. The last one was in a basement. So uh-huh. just
oh, yeah,
light
I remember
itself.
When they debuted this new one.
Yeah, it's cool. It's right mm-hmm. by the Bergamot station. And yeah, I got to be on the new KCRW show, Greater LA, another podcast that you should subscribe to, and got to talk about the Green New Deal, which was really exciting.
Do you want to talk about that some more?
I do.
Or are you just sort of all
I'm
you
said everything? Well, what was it's interesting to frame this within the national conversation, especially since by the time this show airs, Bill de Blasio might be announcing mm-hmm. his presidency. And
Is that supposed to happen it's, like later today?
His president, he's announced, he's just declaring himself president, as you can do now, is a candidacy for president. So he's supposed to announce this week. I just am tying this all together with just based on our recent coverage of aspirational mm-hmm. mayors. So everybody thought that the reason he was rolling out his Green New Deal when he did was to have it be the centerpiece of his presidential campaign. Right. And then we weren't really, and then he said that weird thing about like, we're banning glass buildings or whatever. And then this sustainability person is behind him being like, no, we're not. So it was just a very weird, it was like a tee up to be like, and then I'm going to run on this, whatever. So it was, I didn't really see this coming from our own mayor. Did you think we were going to
this Green New Deal thing for a while? But nothing this specific.
Here's what I thought. So the mayor spoke at this tree summit, the Friday before this announcement went out, and made, I thought, a great speech about forestry jobs, urban forestry jobs being the centerpiece of a, you know, this Green New Deal, a green jobs kind of program, which is how I thought LA was going to spin it. And what they did instead on Monday was they released another version of the sustainability plan, which has been around, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like a new plan. A lot of the stuff was proposed before. It was like 2015, I think, was the last check-in or whatever, where they had a different plan with, now it's more aggressive targets and different goals. But a lot of the same stuff, and just rebranded it mm-hmm. To be the Green New Deal. And then their emissions target, though, is 2050, net zero emissions by 2050. Right. And immediately the people who started the Green New Deal, a bunch of different advocacy groups, including the Sunrise Movement, said this is not what we agreed upon. We said 10 years to decarbonize, not fast enough. So I wondered about your thoughts in general. I didn't really get a chance to go into that on KCRW, and I haven't really discussed that with people, but like, why, I guess, co-opt people's branding?
Yeah.
And then you had the same thing going on with like other presidential campaigns, like the O'Rourke campaign. I'm not going to say his first name because I feel like you say O'Rourke and you're like, what? Who? Who's that?
Robert. Robert O'Rourke.
Same thing. He announced his plan and they also said that this is not good enough. So I'm just wondering.
People pointed out that, so decarbonization by 2050 is the goal in the IPCC report. The famous, like the very dire climate report, said that we need to get to net zero globally by 2050. And so the O'Rourke plan and the Garcetti plan are consistent with that. But I think what the Sunrise Movement is saying, if that's going to happen globally by 2050, the U.S. has to be way ahead.
And cities in particular, because they are already, many of the cities in the U.S. that are the big major cities that have been doing things have already hit peak emissions. We know that it's all downhill from here in hopefully good ways. Your thoughts on that too? I don't know. What were you thinking?
I mean, I am skeptical that it's all in good ways that we're just all downhill from here. But setting that aside, I did see this coming. I think Garcetti has shown a tendency to be, you use the term co-opt. I think that is fair. It's somewhat harsh, but I think it is fairly accurate to the scope of the changes that we've actually seen. Garcetti has been very eager to paint himself as a climate leader, but largely in the absence of the kind of on-the-ground policies that would back that up. I think that we haven't seen during the course of his time in office substantial changes, at least not substantial positive changes, in the state of greenhouse gas emissions, vehicle miles traveled, anything that would suggest a major ecological shift in priorities here. However, Alyssa, you always talk about the fact that Garcetti is the head of the climate mayor's group. He's part of the...
And he's running for like climate mayor, like emperor, the head of C40, which is international C40. Too. Mm-hmm. So he wants to be...
He's in a group with people like Anne Hidalgo of Paris, who has done... Like if you were to compare their record on reducing greenhouse gas emissions... there is no contest because
she
Garcetti
can barely
has done
show
nothing.
Her face in Paris because of all the inconveniencing she's done to car travel. People are mad, which means she's doing a good job.
Right. Whereas here, you know, we have Garcetti saying like road diets, like the narrowing of LA's massive oversized boulevards that were created to handle streetcars and cars and now just have like hundreds of thousands of cars a day. should only happen in communities where they're supported, which is nowhere, really. Yes. I mean, it's basically nowhere.
Let's talk about the specifics of the plan, because it does actually deal with measuring emissions and vehicle miles traveled and reducing both, some might say, by sort of modest amounts. So right now, they released a report at the same time that said the LA drivers travel 15 miles per person per day.
Right.
They want to reduce that at least 13% by 2025 and 45% by 2050. So cutting that by about like 25 million miles per day by 2050. And to move completely over to electric cars by that point to get to net zero emissions. Some people have so what are the ways that they want to reduce vehicle miles traveled?
Well, I think there's two things, again, with the messaging here that comes out of this mayor's office. It's not just we want you to reduce the miles that you're driving and we want to switch cars to electric. Those goals are dependent on switching modes. So it means 50% of all trips will be taken not in a car by 2035. And then the rest of the emissions that we need to cut will be slowly replaced by electric vehicles until in 2050 we have, they never say this, but we'll be banning fossil fuel powered cars in the city by 2050. A lot of other cities are doing it 2035. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I think that just even the messaging, and you saw how this was covered in like the LA Times, which I got, I guess they got an earlier peak than most places. It was like, you know, clean cars.
Yeah.
That's the solution. Clean cars. Drive 6 miles less by 2035. I mean, how does your brain, how do you start to understand like what that change means to you? That you have to buy an electric vehicle by 2035? No. Like, let's shift as many trips as we can so we don't have to buy, make, you know, put all these EVs on the road. That's not the goal.
Yeah. And it is, I think, an interesting counterpoint to a couple of years ago during the 2016 campaigns for president. It's very easy, I should say, for commentators on the political left to lampoon the notion of like clean coal jobs, which became sort of a cause celeb at some point in like 2016 or so. However, we see a lot of the same really obsequious catering to people who think that driving can't be disrupted as the primary mode of travel. And so, like, we need to have clean driving when it is also well known that you can't actually you can't eliminate the emissions that are related to the production of cars and the transportation of people in that mode. Like you're saying, Alyssa, it's actually much more necessary that we look at shifting those trips out of cars entirely. Yeah. So
reducing vehicle miles traveled is the most important part of this plan,
not the transfer.
And some people, Juan Matute at the UCLA Institute of Transportation Studies, Elijah Chilin from Curbed, talked to him, and he basically said that the strategies in the plan, they include street safety improvements, streetscaping projects, like all good stuff, completing the 28 transportation projects by 2028, something that they were already hoping to do in time for the Olympics. They broached the idea of congestion pricing in this in the same report. But Juan Matute said that nothing involved in this plan will reduce vehicle miles traveled by more than 5%, and maybe not at all. Because the population will maybe like continue increasing. Like, you're at best, break even.
My impression is the same. I think that coming from Juan Matute, that is a particularly damning critique of this proposal. But looking through it, it's hard to imagine that this is a really transformative series of changes for LA.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, Alyssa, you said that he doesn't even bring up the goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2050, because so much, I felt like my immediate reaction to this was, if you're saying you're going to do something in 2050, that's
why not just go for it.
First of all, go for it. Second of all, that's like the equivalent in my mind politically of saying that it's never going to happen.
Well, didn't Governor Brown, before he left office, he wanted the state to be carbon neutral by 2040? So technically this doesn't even align. Was that like, I mean, it doesn't even align with that goal that And as he's signing that paper and jumping out of office, like, that's what I would do too. But like, that's what you have to do.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess we probably will have seceded by then. He's thinking, so the standards will be different.
It will be.
It talks about buses a little bit, this Green New Deal. They want to get to zero emission buses by 2025, which at the pace of ridership decreasing, that will be driving around basically empty.
Yep.
And at the same, was it the next day after the Green New Deal was announced, Metro came out and said that they will be cutting.
It was the next day.
Services. What kinds of cuts are we talking about?
We're talking about going from 6 minute to 8 minute frequencies during rush hour on the Metro light rail network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 25% service cut. We're talking about going,
which in practice will probably be like from 10 minutes to like 14 minutes because often the headways are not that fast.
Yeah, because particularly for the Blue and Expo lines, they actually can't really do a foolproof job of controlling the headways. Although,
right.
Theoretically, running fewer trains should make that
right.
easier.
Yeah,
to
that's
do.
Right.
Just run them once an hour, and then you can be sure that they're going to come when you want them to. The midday frequencies also get cut. Buses are seeing a substantial service hour reduction that is in part, this information was first surfaced by Henry Fung at CalWatch on Twitter, who is part of the Citizen Advisory Committee for Metro. And he noted that part of the calculation here, politically speaking, is that the 2019-2020 budget year is a leap year. Mm-hmm. So there is an extra service day that actually, to a certain degree, covers up the daily reduction in service hours.
Incredible.
Which is really cynical and gross. And also the last bullet point was that for midday service on the rail network, which is already atrocious by any reasonable standard mm-hmm. anywhere in the world, they would be reducing the light rail vehicle sets from 3 cars to 2 cars. So it's basically just a big middle finger to anybody who rides the trains or buses for any reason.
Speaking of midday service, people are talking about how the L train in Brooklyn has been slowed down a lot from construction. It is this unmitigated disaster.
Right.
People are screaming about it. And it has reduced service to only slightly better than what you get on the Red Line at non-peak hours.
Today.
Like you get like 10 minutes. You have to wait like 10 minutes for the L train now, which has people like fully losing their minds.
Yeah. And it is atrocious. I'm a Red Line rider, and Red Line service is garbage all the time. That being said, the L train carries like 45,000 people per mile.
Sure.
And the Red Line carries about 8,000 people per mile. And Metro seems more interested in a gradual decline of that number than boosting it up to the levels of the L train.
So, because that's what's going to happen, right? We have ridership decreasing and the response is to cut services, which will lead to even fewer riders just like headed to zero. What would have to happen to get more money into the service to try and encourage people to ride, to get something like, we're moving in the opposite direction of the thing we talk about every episode, dedicated bus lanes, like allowing a bus to
congestion pricing would help.
Yeah.
To drive people onto transit.
And to
get money for it.
That is what Metro has talked about repeatedly, congestion pricing as a means of, so we just had Phil Washington talking about using congestion pricing to fund free transit for everyone forever. And I have to say, if transit is free and the bus comes every 30 to 45 minutes, no one's going to fucking ride it. It doesn't matter if it's free, if it comes every 45 minutes or whatever. So service is an important component. I'm curious to see whether or not this is Metro's proposed budget. We should say this hasn't been adopted by the board of directors yet. And it does fly directly in the face of a number of political statements that have been made by Garcetti and others,
including so, in the
Green New Deal.
Green New Deal. It says, I just want to point out a few milestones and initiatives. I'm just looking right at this page. What year would you, okay, first of all, it says support Metro with their implementation of a congestion pricing pilot.
And what year are they planning to start doing that?
As a clarification underneath, it just says work with Metro on a congestion pricing study. It's the same. A study. Okay. What year would you think we would need that as part of our climate emergency?
I would think we could maybe start.
This was a study.
Monday that they announced this. I would say maybe by like Thursday.
Yeah, we can have a study.
Just a study.
This is 2025.
That's when the study is. Okay,
we have plenty of time.
Oh, man.
Let me just throw out another one for you. Increase LA's average walk score to 75. So that's the walk score, which means that most of the city is, and the average walk score, I don't know what the average walk score is now, probably like in the 50s or 60s, maybe, I'm guessing. It doesn't say.
And that would involve just like encouraging retail to open up. It would involve some rezoning.
According to this, it just says incorporate standard plans for public works projects to integrate pedestrian centric design into applicable projects. This is again like dancing around. Nothing that would say like
crosswalks.
And then it says implement a street furniture program that reduces heat exposure. Okay, so maybe better bus shelters.
Bus shelter? I don't even think that's what they're describing.
Wait, this one though, guys. Implement Wilmington Avenue Great Streets Project.
Okay.
Well,
that was a blast from the past.
That will definitely get people walking Wilmington in two blocks of Wilmington.
I can see the ads now with like a polar bear falling into
the
ocean.
For that one?
We should say that was announced when? 2013? Yes. When did the Great Streets Project come out?
I think that was like a month after Garcetti took office.
Okay, this was also slated for 2025.
Oh my goodness.
So we have that to look forward to as well.
And again, that is in a district where the mayor has a political ally, Joe Buscaino, who is in favor of the Great Streets.
So it's going to have taken 12 years.
Council members like Paul Caretz will have made it his mission to destroy the Great Streets project.
With a political ally in place, it will only take 12 years to improve a single street for like a couple blocks.
How about improve travel time on LA County's bus network by 30%? Here's the actionable things. Complete 3 BRT projects, bus rapid transit.
Okay.
Complete Metro's next gen bus study. I thought that was supposed to be done this year. Expand Dash service. Create 4 new Dash routes. Dash made a huge expansion recently.
They're doing that like right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these are all things that are actually being done. Execute a suite of bus and transit corridor improvements.
And the BRT projects are all in the... By 28th. Yeah. So, I mean,
2028.
Okay.
So you start to see these patterns that are like things that are actually already being done that have this very long lead time. So I tried to find some examples of things that would be done before this term ended, like 2021. So there's very few things that are actually in the plan that will change mobility dramatically in like the time, you know, before my children go to high school. And one of them is expand Metro bike share to at least 3 new neighborhoods. 2021.
Do you think three new neighborhoods? I have a question. Is Metro bike share going to still exist in 2021?
So here's my
theory. I think if they expanded
Here's my theory. I think it will exist and it will be mostly scooters. That's, I think, the transition that's going to happen.
False.
No.
Scooters are no fun for me.
What happened?
I like the bikes better is what I'm saying.
But the scooters aren't any fun for you.
Well,
you used to love the scooters.
I don't love the scooters. I love the bikes.
Wow.
But they don't work for everybody is what I'm saying. It can't be all scooters.
I don't think they'll be all scooters. I think the scooters will be incorporated into, because these companies can't like survive. They're not making money, the scooter companies. And so I think that's the only way that they will ultimately survive is through a contract with the city.
Oh, like they'll like the city will work with them closer.
Think so.
You think that they'll. That's interesting.
And I actually have another question, too, because the Olympics features so prominently in the LA Green New Deal. If we're only managing to stagnate, basically with this plan, if we're getting a 5% reduction, which is what stores give you as a discount, and then you get to the cash register and you're like, that's less than sales tax. What? That wasn't worth it. if we're getting a 5% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions and so much of this is tied to the Olympics, would we, I would love to see this calculation. Somebody can maybe handle this. Would we be better off just not having the Olympics, which are associated with enormous
huge increase?
Oh yeah, that came out this week too.
In greenhouse gas emissions for a 2-week event. Yeah. We have evidence from the Smithsonian that the Vancouver Olympics resulted in a temporary increase of greenhouse gas emissions that might be offset over 20 years.
Wow.
From people like flying there?
From getting everybody to the event, mostly. Yeah. The logistical and transportation carbon costs are huge.
Yeah, maybe they'll be banned by then.
I mean, if we're really serious about this, I would love to see whether or not the 2,000 kilotons of greenhouse gas emissions that came out of the Rio Games, for example, what period of time it would take us to offset that with the things that are in the LA Green New Deal.
Yeah.
Curious.
So the good news is, as I think Juan Matute pointed out on Twitter, the LA 2035 mobility plan, if it were actually enacted,
right.
They started in 2016, had very little mobility on it so far. But if it were actually enacted, it would cover everything that this Green New Deal wants to do in terms of vehicle miles traveled reduction and actually moving, having people switch modes from cars to bikes and
walking. Well, yeah, if we had already been doing this, I think his point was really good. If we had already been implementing this at the rate that we said we were, we wouldn't have to be setting these dramatic goals. But also some of the goals that are in this plan are less than the 2035.
Yeah. Plan. So a little discouraging now that we're getting serious about climate by putting out a new plan that is worse than one that we had three years ago.
And has a completion date of 15 years later.
Yes.
That is a little discouraging.
And I didn't mean to be down on scooters. I'm just saying they can't all be scooters. But you meant scooter companies and different types of transit.
I meant that scooter companies
will become our dockless mobility.
Will be part of the bike share system. Because
a lot of other cities do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to try a new segment called LA Podcast Reacts, where I tell you a story that happened this week. People love these like reaction videos.
Yeah.
And so this, I think, will be huge for us. I'll tell you a
Are
story
you
that happened
pictures?
This week in pieces.
Are you going to make a video?
No, it's vocal. Oh. You have to react vocally. And you have to pretend that you don't know what happened in the story, even though you already do.
Okay.
So this was outside USC at Exposition and Figueroa. Normal, just a normal spring day.
Mm-hmm.
A car approaches. Yep. A black SUV approaches and tries to turn left onto the campus, possibly against a red light. That hasn't been confirmed for sure yet, but certainly seems like it was. A car speeds through the intersection, unable to stop in time, hits the back of the SUV.
You mean a driver?
Sorry. Yes, a driver.
Unless
inside
it was an autonomous car.
Yes. Hits the back of the SUV. Is that okay? Can I say that? Hits the back of the driver's encasement. causing the SUV to spin out.
Right.
And the SUV hits a motorcycle cop, a stationary motorcycle cop. The cop flies into a fountain.
Yeah.
Is in stable condition. It was hurt, but not too badly hurt. I think some broken bones. It turned out that the SUV belonged to the Inglewood Sheriff's Department. And that the SUV was driven by James Butts, the mayor of Inglewood.
Okay. Wow. That is
quite a story.
Kind of unsurprising. It would be my reaction. I wish it were surprising, but it's just like, he was driving.
He was driving.
That's the surprising part to me.
Yes.
I think is that he was driving
when it
himself.
First came out that he was in the car, I also assumed that he was being driven. But this is kind of the one, he's checking the one box in his tenure that people were sort of unable to criticize him for, like hitting, blasting a motorcycle cop into a fountain by trying to turn left on a red light. That's really
the mirror image of like 10 years ago when Villaraigosa was hit while biking and then came out of the hospital and was like, I'm going to do all of these things to make it safer to bike in this city. On the other hand, we have James Butts, who is on the Metro board about to be the chair of the Metro board for a year starting in July, and has roundly criticized all attempts to make LA a less car oriented city.
Right. He's conducting research. Would it be would it be safe if I did this?
Did he get a ticket?
I know he had to cancel. They canceled the event that he was going to that he was going to USC to speak.
I think put him in charge of like a countywide Vision Zero program. Maybe sure. would be a good first project.
Scott, you've been doing a lot of research into this story that we sort of came out last week that we didn't get into. About the FBI arrest. This made a lot of news. A lot of people have heard about this. Self-proclaimed jihadi who wanted to bomb a
white supremacist rally.
Yeah, a white supremacist rally. And then the counter protest in Long Beach.
It's all over the place. So this is an individual named Mark Stephen Domingo, who was arrested last weekend. And he had been basically on the FBI's radar for a little over a month, basically on message boards talking about wanting to avenge the Christchurch, New Zealand mosque shootings that resulted in the deaths of 50 Muslim individuals there. And the complaint, the federal complaint that came out, shows him to be an individual who is really angry at Western society, at non-Islamic society, going on message boards talking about how LA is full of non-Muslim people who he says are frequently starting conflicts with him. He feels personally very oppressed. It's interesting because he was an extremely recent convert to Islam. At one point in the complaint, actually comes up that he told his partner, who was an undercover, who was an informant for the FBI, that he was considering postponing his attack so that he could finish reading the Quran and celebrate his first Ramadan.
In case at the end it says not to.
Right. Basically, yeah. it was very interesting to read because, yeah, this person was very new to Islam. He had previously served as a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan in his mid-20s. So he had done that basically right out of high school. There is more to this story, though, that is kind of interesting to reflect on. The FBI team that brought him in was the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is a cooperation between local and federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI and the DEA. The JTTF has come under scrutiny a lot in the past several years. They are, of course, we've talked a lot about policing and federal policing and the cooperation between local and federal entities, particularly since the ascension of Donald Trump to the presidency. There's been a lot of discussion about how that should be carried out. A lot of liberal cities have said they don't want any sort of cooperation like that happening between their local law enforcement, in our case, LAPD, and the FBI. Some cities, San Francisco is one, have actually stopped doing any kind of work with the JTTF. Portland is another one where they actually had prior, like a long time ago, in 2004, post 9/11, the JTTF had tied a Muslim man to the Madrid train bombings in 2004 when he had nothing to do with it. So the JTTF has been accused on multiple occasions of Islamophobic actions and basically entrapment, which is an interesting lens through which to look at this complaint, because Domingo, who was clearly throughout this document saying he wanted to avenge these shootings, he wanted to be a jihadi, had no contacts at all. Like he was on this message board, apparently an invite-only message board for people who were radical or otherwise interested in violent jihad, as it is frequently referred to throughout the complaint. However, everybody within his universe in this complaint is working for or is paid by the FBI. There's an undercover FBI agent who provided him with the inert IED that he had when he was actually brought in by the FBI. his sole contact was apparently an informant who was being paid by the FBI. And the conversations that he has, it's very clear he has no real ties to any organization or any kind of direction. He talks about attacking Christians in various different forms, either at a church, during Easter, or what have you. He returns frequently to the idea of committing anti-Semitic attacks against Jews, particularly chilling given the recent Poway shooting about a week following his original plan, which was to attack a synagogue in the San Fernando Valley on the first weekend of Passover. He talked about detonating an IED on one of the freeways, drive-by shootings against cops. And then ultimately, as you mentioned at the top, Hayes, he settled on this idea that they were going to a white supremacist rally that was going to be held in Long Beach and to detonate an IED there. The IED plan came from the undercover FBI agent.
Yeah.
They got all of the materials. He actually went to home supply stores and bought the materials. It is, of course, a hard question as to whether or not he was committed enough that he would have tried to go through with this plan without the support of the people who were working undercover with law enforcement being there. But nobody else appears in this document who was working with him.
I alluded to this at the beginning. So after the white supremacist rally got canceled, basically
at the last minute.
And there was a counter protest that was going to happen anyway against the white nationalist rally. And Mark Stephen Domingo planned on bombing that instead.
He was planning. Yes. The undercover FBI agent that he was working with, who provided him with the improvised explosive device, the fake one, was Caucasian. So his plan was that person would go as a member of the white supremacist rally just to like make sure that everything was in position. And Domingo would go and pretend to be part of the counter protest.
Okay.
And I believe you're right that they basically were just going to go ahead with it.
They were going to go ahead with it anyway. What I think we talked about this a little bit. But good luck. What I think is kind of interesting about it, this would seem like a very ripe story to be co-opted by the president and Fox News. An ISIS-inspired convert to Islam planned on all these like various attacks on people of many different religions.
Right.
Like would seem like something that he would seize on. I think it's the fact that the last attack that they were going to go through was on people that were counter protesting a white nationalist rally. That I think is what has made it uninteresting.
Yeah. I find it fascinating, but
for the president and like people to like to foment dissent about it. It's just amazing to me that makes it seem like something that they don't want to touch. The fact that he was potentially going to kill people that were not, that are like anti-Trump in some way.
I think there are just two things that I want to say about this that I think are interesting. This planned white supremacist rally in Long Beach was following one the previous day in Huntington Beach. So, I mean, we've seen throughout the past few years a variety of far-right white supremacist groups becoming more and more active in Southern California.
Some relevantly this week, the Rise Above movement that went to Charlottesville just were sentenced. These are Huntington Beach.
Right. That's right.
Sunburnt fascists who are going to jail.
So that they were going to come up from Huntington Beach to Long Beach. And it was really only the vigilance of the Long Beach community and organizers working with the Antifa groups there and the DSA chapter in Long Beach turning out a large number of counter protesters who did show up to this protest and who were unaware, like everybody else, of the planned attack until the following day, until Monday of last week, that prevented this hate group from being able to successfully organize in Long Beach. The other thing that I think is interesting is to return to the synagogue shooter in San Diego County. This is something where we've seen a lot of people who are radicalized gathering on these message boards, forums, in places of the internet that I think most people avoid, but certain people willingly and frequently congregate in. The FBI, I think, has said, as recently as following the Poe shooter, that event from last week, that there is not a good way to stop these things from happening because this is protected speech. And mm-hmm. even though people go on 8chan and talk about wanting to like sell women into sex slavery and like run over people if they're Jewish or whatever, that there's not really a way to do anything about that. The interesting thing that comes out of this complaint is that they are apparently doing exactly that.
Yeah, they send someone to respond to those people's messages and say, yeah, let's do it. Here's some stuff for you to do that with.
If they are Muslim.
Right.
This is an invite-only message board where people are seriously or not seriously talking about being radically opposed to the American government, et cetera. And yet we have people on the FBI payroll who are apparently just camped out yeah. there and meeting up with those people, supplying them and et cetera. So it's interesting that on the one hand we have very radical white groups that are not being policed in this way. And then we have very radical people of color who yeah. are clearly being policed in a different way.
And those white groups are way more out in the open. The Rise Above movement were putting up YouTube videos of them slinging kettlebells around and yeah. like whacking each other with plastic swords and stuff.
8chan, you don't need an invite to be on 8chan, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
I've tried, but.
Measles.
We're back with measles.
We talked last week about my nightmare is not getting measles, but seeing where I went while I was a measles carrier printed in the news. And that happened to somebody. There was a couple new diagnoses. I think one in Orange County of an infant who got it, who was too young to be vaccinated. Every parent's nightmare right now.
Right.
And one adult who was apparently unvaccinated. And they released places that if you were there, I don't know what you check and see if you have measles. If you were in any of these
places. Within a 2 hour window too. So you have
only within a 2 hour
window.
Yeah. Of being at LAX on April 30th.
So I think they had the terminals in there too. So, you know,
terminal two from 7:45 PM to 11:45 PM.
He's going to read the whole thing.
Then the next morning. Well, this is, I mean, I think it's like a fun, like vacation itinerary for this person.
It's super fun.
Someone took the LAX shuttle to the Farmer's Daughter Hotel. You know what? It was an LAX employee shuttle.
Yeah, that's what was confusing about that.
I think this could have been a
pilot. The employee. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The employee shuttle.
And here's why I definitely think it was a pilot. It was terminal two from 7:45 to 11:45 PM. And then the next morning from 7:10 to 9:30 AM, someone did a back and forth.
Well,
route.
Maybe not a pilot, but an employee of some sort.
Could have been a flight attendant, something like that.
You
would think they stayed at the Farmer's Daughter Hotel on Fairfax. And you think, why wouldn't they just stay at an airport hotel? I've seen pilots. They put them up at the Bonaventure.
I see them at the
downtown.
Wilshire Grand. I see them all sorts of places.
That's fine. I think it's interesting.
If you're patient zero, Hayes is going to find you, just so you know.
Went to the Farmer's Daughter Hotel. If you were there all day through 10 a.m. from the 27th to the 28th of April, you're in trouble. That person went to Pete's Coffee on 3rd and Fairfax, Fratelli's Cafe, Tarte Restaurant in the hotel, then hit up the Grove, went to J. Crew and Barnes & Noble, then the Farmer's Market for 2 hours, and then Paper Source.
And the Tar Pits also.
Then Whole Foods and the Tar Pits.
Yeah.
Very busy, fun day.
All I can say is I had to do a model that my like senior project in college was on epidemiology, and just knowing that the Grove and the Tar Pits and LAX are the places where it's like, if you were here, get checked for measles. That's
yeah, seems like it would be sort of difficult to contain.
It seems like that's out of the bag already. Yeah.
But those are places, I mean, think if you, I can just think like I took my kids to the Grove when they were very tiny babies, walked around all those same places to see that. I would be terrified.
So
I would
like
be
your kids are old enough to be vaccinated now,
but
like
barely.
Yesterday you went to Union Station for the 80th anniversary.
Right.
Would you go anywhere near a place like that right now if your kids didn't have a measles vaccine?
I think if my kids were that small, I would have serious questions about taking them to tour. It is touristy places too, right? It's always like these places where either people are coming in from out of town or, I don't know, they didn't know and they were just out. But I would have serious doubts about taking my kids in public places or, that's a tough call. I mean, you don't want to take them out, but I would be very worried.
We were texting
about this. It would be constant stress.
Last night, first I went to Taco Madness, LA Taco's big event. It was unbelievable. Packed. Insane.
Who won?
It was so fun. I don't know. I'm trying I have been testing out being vegan, and I was in the wrong place.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
I was trying not to focus on the tacos, which were everywhere.
My LA story was actually supposed to be, I found flour tortillas that stand by.
At Sonora Town.
And those are Sonora Town.
Which was one of the two finalists,
Those are good. Yeah, those are really good tortillas.
But then to try and get something that I could eat, I walked into Grand Central Market and then remembered what we had just been texting about. And I was like, what? Went right back out.
But you're okay. A baby is not. You would be fine.
I know.
I mean, you just in your mind.
Out of sympathy for the babies.
Or are you not vaccinated? It's okay.
No, I'm like, I just got.
Double vaccinated.
I just got checked.
Triple vaccinated.
I pull up my records like every day to make sure.
So we have a... information about a police shooting that came out this past week. So in December of last year, Torrance police during a traffic stop. Actually, they believed that they were stopping a suspect in a stolen car incident and opened fire on that individual whose name was
Christopher Mitchell
and killed him at the scene. Shortly thereafter, or a couple weeks ago, I guess, after much community protest from Black Lives Matter, they released an edited video of the traffic stop from the body cams worn by the officers. That edited video had a narration and sort of chopped up the passage of time. It basically served to construe Mitchell as being a threat to the officers, saying that he reached for a weapon, which actually ended up being not a weapon, but an airsoft gun. And if you watch the unedited video, it does not clear that he did reach for it. Anyway, the unedited version of that video was secured by the mother of Christopher Mitchell's lawyers this past week, which made it clear that Mitchell had been shot within 15 seconds of the officers making first contact with him. It is extremely disturbing to watch. Basically, the officers come up, guns drawn, in a way that is very familiar to anybody who has been following the police shootings of particularly African-American males for the past several years. Guns drawn, ordering him. He had his hands on the steering wheel. Was polite and apologetic to the police officers. They were ordering him to exit the vehicle, at which point the officer turns off their flashlight so the driver's seat becomes dark, and then they immediately fire upon him, and he died at the scene, his mother says, without them attempting to render any medical assistance to him while he was dying. So extremely troubling. I think that the response of the Torrance police chief who released this edited video and said that Mitchell had a criminal history, which was actually not something that was known to the police officers at the time of his death, is something that we've seen basically as Mitchell's attorney, Mitchell's mother's attorney says, amounts to basically character assassination, and is extremely troubling. So Black Lives Matter is going to be at they're going to be at the Torrance City Council meeting on Tuesday at 7 p.m. for anybody who wants to be part of that.
Tuesday is 7 p.m. in Torrance. I didn't realize that Torrance had its own
police department. Yeah,
force. They're not a sheriff's department.
No, and they are somewhat a larger city, so that I think that's pretty common.
Also, this week in South LA. We have Rodeo Road, not to be confused with Rodeo Drive, was renamed to Obama Boulevard. Did you see the lines, the turnout yeah. for that event?
The metal detectors.
Were there? I didn't see that.
It was like a huge banner and then just like, you know, 10 TSA like lineups to go in.
Crazy.
Herb Wesson proposed this name change a couple of years ago yeah, at this point, ago. Right? And so, yeah, now we have Obama Boulevard in Crenshaw and Baldwin Hills, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
This is kind
of Obama can't show up for this.
That's what I'm saying.
He's got 20 projects set up at Netflix. You can't like combine a few meetings at Netflix.
Or like change the date till he could be here.
Yeah.
I mean, like he's not going to come at some point.
I saw everyone showing up and I was like, oh, we must
have. I thought it was a surprise.
Come out that Obama was going to be there.
Yeah.
In any case, I wish that I had gone. I mean, I do hate waiting in line for stuff like this.
Really,
to be really patted line. Down.
But I wish that I'd gone because it seemed like such a jubilant occasion. And especially, you know, when you think about the fact that pretty much the only coherent narrative of Donald Trump's first term in office has been his desire to erase any trace of Obama's time in office. It's really cool to see City of LA, Herb Wesson, and particularly the community in South LA get a chance to affirm that, you know, the accomplishments of the Obama administration, such as they were.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a freeway segment being named after him, too.
I think that has happened already.
The 134 as it goes by like Eagle Rock or something to his. But like, where was that party? I can't. They didn't like close down the freeway and have a party.
Not a huge black community in Eagle Rock.
So why did they do that? Also, no naming freeways after people anymore because we're tearing them down.
I'm for that.
Can we agree?
Is that part of the Green New Deal?
Also, that's in 2075.
Yes. After the freeways are mostly underwater.
But they should take, I mean, I'm not going to be the one to say it, but that would be a great street to close Obama Boulevard and make it like a complete walking and biking street.
Oh yeah, because it's not, that would be a perfect street
to pedestrian. I mean, cars can still go, but it'd be, if you want to put some improvements towards it, like let cars go, but like make it like a really great walking and biking. And
because it was shut down for that day, obviously, and it worked.
Everyone survived.
I think you should be keeping a running list of the streets that we're
going to pedestrianize.
Yeah.
That's what, if Obama really wanted to make a difference right now instead of the Netflix things, he should physically be present on the new Obama Boulevard every day, which would automatically make it become a pedestrian zone.
Obama Jam. We name it like Obama Jam. We slow down traffic. It's better than a road diet.
We do have our show this week. We should probably shout that
May 9th on Thursday. We have our show. Cancel your ticket if you can't come so people on the wait list can get in. If you are coming, we are so excited to see you. Please bring a question. Just a question, that like a big question that you have about the future of the city of LA or the present, not the past. And we'll be answering questions on stage. You'll get to come up on stage and talk to us.
And if you can't come, you can hear the show that we record at some point. You'll be able to.
Yeah, I really hope it works. It's our first live show. I really don't want to promise anything.
So maybe.
So just show up. Because
show up if you can.
Like Mike's situation, I just don't. I can't commit to that.
Well, I think
we'll try. We're really going to try.
I think they sound like it's
we have the one of the largest public universities in the country at our disposal.
I think we can do it.
It should work.
I think
but
we can do
I
it.
Just don't know. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week on LA Podcast. Bye bye. LA Podcast. LA Podcast gonna have